It is the, whatever day today is. Today is the 19th of February, and we are going to talk trademarks today, I think. All right. That's why this is 2-9. I think this is the right one. Okay. Yep. Okay. We are moving on to the third of the big three. And as I've said in our previous classes, this one is not one of the constitutional ones. It's not one of the long-standing ones. It's the ones that has really the fewest international treaties attached to it. But conversely, it's probably, I would suspect it is probably one that has a significant percentage of businesses involved in licensing. Not every business is going to license patents. That tends to be limited to a particular type of business. And while many companies, probably most companies, have some sort of copyright licensing happening, more often than not, it is not about their main part of their business, but in terms of operations, word processing software, accounting systems, the music on their hold system. Not really directly the business they're doing, but just in support of it. But trademarks apply to almost every company, almost every business, certainly those that are consumer facing, and even those that are business to business facing. Whether they're licensing their marks out, whether they're licensing their marks in, certainly having a trademark is much more common than having cell phone copyrighted works that are relevant to the business. The trademark is key to most more businesses than other things. And that's because it's all about the brand. Trademarks do not exist without commerce. Copyright, the rights are there in order to encourage, right, encourage people to be creative by allowing them to successfully sell their works. But there are plenty of copyrighted works that are never sold. May not be marketable, may not be marketed. Similarly with patents, there has to be utility. But there's no statutory requirement of actually bringing a patent to market, which to a certain extent leads to some of the challenges with non-practicing patent holders, aka trolls. But you do not have legal protection of a mark if it's not attached to, associated with, something for sale. Very simply, a trademark identifies the source of goods or services in commerce. In commerce, that is a key issue. Could be goods, could be services, identifies the source. What does that mean, identifies the source? How does a trademark identify a source? What do you think?
I think it has to do with recognition. So when somebody sees a trademark, they recognize that mark as being associated with a service or a brand, a service or a product.
Okay, but what does that mean about source? So
it lets you know who's making the product, and so you can you know what to expect with the quality and familiarity with the product that you would come to recognize with the brand.
I would grant you the second part. That is, the reason we have trademarks is to allow consumers to at least potentially get a consistent experience. That a product or service associated with a particular unique mark will be, or will hopefully be, the same quality of experience, same quality of product or service as the last time the consumer interacted with. Where I would disagree with you, and where I think the word source may be somewhat confusing, somewhat misleading, is it doesn't necessarily identify the company. Some trademarks absolutely identify either they are the brand, that is, the or are the corporate name, or they are equivalent to the corporate name. And I, every time I talk about trademarks in the context of a class, I marvel at the display on the backs of all your computers. Now, you will notice, of course, that when you close your computer, the mark looks to you to be upside down, right? And of course, a few seconds of thought lets you know why that is. The same reason why when it says ambulance backwards on the front of an ambulance, it's not for the person staring at it, it's not for the driver. It's for someone looking at it through a mirror. Similarly, the reason that all of your laptops, when you close them, have upside down trademarks is so that when you open them, you're a billboard to me, all right side up. So, I don't know if anyone's ever dealt with a docking station with a new laptop. You sort of, when you have it closed, you're like, oh no, it has to go in upside, you know, with the mark upside down because it has to pop up. So, some of what I see are the maker. You know, pardon the expression, the maker's mark. I don't see any good red wax. So we have Dell, right? That's Dell Computer. That's good. Toshiba, Asus, good. I think it says Sony at the top of yours. Okay, Sony. That, I can barely see that, right? Lenovo. Those are the brand. Those are the makers, the brands. But then I see Vaya. That's not the. I see a sort of silhouetted fruit. Now, yes, that is because the name of the company is Apple, but it doesn't have the word Apple. So it's not necessarily the name of the manufacturer, of the seller. Source can also indicate that they share a common maker, even if you don't, from the mark, know what the maker is. So for example, this, actually, I'm looking at three different trademarks, well, two, and then I know of the third. So it says Samsung on the front. That's the manufacturer. On the back it says OtterBox, because that's the manufacturer of the case that's around the phone. But there's also the mark Galaxy S3. Now Galaxy S3 doesn't tell you who made it. But it does tell you that it is common. It is a common family of other devices called Galaxy S3 that are like this. Also Galaxy S2s, Galaxy S4s, Galaxy S's, and the soon-to-be-announced Galaxy S5. And they have a common source. They may not name the source, but they identify the common source of goods or services in commerce. It's a federal thing. We have state trademarks. We have common law trademark rights. One has certain rights with the mark, regardless of statute. But we are most familiar with the trademark as registered with the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office. How is it absent specific enabling statutory language in the Constitution, how is it that the U.S. government has the authority to issue and manage trademarks? The answer is Commerce Clause. Right? Congress reserves the right to legislate regarding interstate commerce, so federal trademarks, very specific. That's where the authority comes from. And the particular law, particular law you will also see referred to as the Lanham Act. Can be confusing if you're not that familiar with it. Trademark law, U.S. trademark law, Lanham Act, they're interchangeable terms. The original version of the current statute, trademark law, was the Lanham Act. It has been revised over the years, but it is the same thing. Like I say, states. Now, just because a mark must be connected with commerce doesn't mean that one has to wait until the mark is being used in commerce to start the process of registration. So copyrights exist on creation. Patents and trademarks must be issued in order to have legal force and effect. And you don't have to wait, or your client doesn't have to wait, to be using it to begin the process. Just like with a patent, we have, I mean, not quite just like, but we have in the patent, we have the provisional application, and then they're getting it together, and then you have the non-provisional application. And the timing, as we've discussed, starts with the provisional application. Similarly, while it's not that the timing starts with the filing here, but the process does. Unlike patents, trademarks don't, they're not applicable retroactively, but you may start the process intending to use the mark. Dear Patent and Trademark Office, here's the application, here's the mark we want to use, here are the types of products, goods and services on which we're going to use it. We're not using it yet. Love us. Please issue this mark. Back and forth and back and forth, and you go through the office actions. And at some point, assuming that all the objections have been dealt with, that there's nothing, the mark gets then published for opposition to make sure that nobody else makes a public claim. We have a prior right to that mark, but it won't be issued. It won't be issued if it isn't yet in use. You must convert an intent to use application to an in-use application before the mark is issued. When we were trying as a school to get protection for our very distinctive, pretending we're in New York City, Statue of Liberty tea. If you think that was an accidental choice, there's a really nice bridge over Long Island Sound from here to Connecticut I'd like to sell you. But anyway, our alumna, Lee Hechtel, who's in-house counsel at NBTY, she was helping us, volunteering to her time to help us. And I recall we got a note from Lee that we had to go downstairs to the bookstore and take pictures, or Patty DeRoches did, of the shirts with the mark and the notebooks with the mark and the rulers and the ties and everything else that we were claiming we were using the mark in commerce. We had to show specimens of the product for sale to the public. And then, of course, there were problems with the mark, and that's another story. It was improperly rejected, according to Lee, and she was righteously indignant. But in the meanwhile, before we could get to that point, we had to show specimens. We had to convert our intent to use application, or at least at that point we were using it. We had to say, yes, Patent and Trademark Office, we're eligible. We're using it. So you have to show some sort of specimens. If you're putting it on things initially, you can provide specimens, pictures of them, whatever. But if you haven't yet done it, you have to before that. Now, the good news for our clients is that the process of applying for trademark registration is much, much, much less expensive than patent registration. It's not not such good news if you're a patent lawyer, mind you, but the trademark process is just a few hundred dollars for the mark, and you may have, you know, pay more for different classes of goods and services. We'll talk about that. And the search. Now remember, we talked about patent filing. And I know we're not, this is not licensing, but we have to establish the foundation. We talked about the need, or at least the recommendation, to search for patents and the difficulty in searching for patents because of the need to disclose any prior art and to be able to predict the strength, the likelihood and the strength of the patent based on any prior art that was out there. I think the searches are expensive and they need to be done with someone who has real significant expertise. Much the same with trademark. You want to do a search because you want to know if it's likely that the mark will be issued, and if it is, how similar is it to other things out there? But it's not just registered marks. There may be businesses that are using the mark in a common law way that might still have priority rights or might limit your ability. So searches are important, and they aren't that expensive. I haven't done it all that recently, but my understanding is, and if any of you is involved, typically to order a search from one of the search firms and then to have an attorney review it, somewhere in the $1,000 to $1,500 range for most law firms. It's more expensive for a search if you want it quickly, if you can give them a few days. So there are these search firms. Now, you say, perhaps, and certainly your client will say to you, why am I paying for a search? Because I can go right on to the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office, and I go to, what is it, the test system. Right? I can search the Patent and Trademark Office's trademark system. And I can see applications, and I can see registered marks, and I can see dead marks, which sounds much more morbid than it is. And I can, right? Okay, so why do I need to pay one of these search firms a lot of money? Because they're searching more than that. Not only are they searching the Patent and Trademark Office database, but they are searching domain name databases. They are searching websites. They are searching print publications, if they're doing it right, bless you. They're looking for anything that might conflict with this desired branding. And they're not just looking for the exact match. If it's a word, they're looking for words that are similarly spelled or that would sound the same. Think about radio advertisements. Two marks that sound very similar. One might interfere with the other. And if it's a graphical mark, it's not all that easy for an inexperienced person to craft a search for a graphical trademark, a shape or a drawing or something else, to figure out which things are similar to it or too similar to it, which aren't. So that's where you get the value. You get the value in the trademark lawyer knowing what to ask for. And you have the value of the trademark service whose records go much more broad than just the Patent and Trademark Office. So what happens if you don't search? Yeah.
We just kind of went through this somewhat last year. We rebranded our team. So for the logos, designed, then we submitted them through the league for approval, and they sent them out to council. But so this is our new logo here.
That doesn't just me.
So we did four logos, and we obviously, for us being a New York team, we rebranded from Long Island to New York. One of our key things was for hats.
Wait. You took Long Island off your branding? I don't think you're allowed here anymore.
We did. But our big thing was we wanted to have some sort of NYL. Have a logo created. yet. We've actually just been using this one for the past year and a half before we introduced the other one, so that we can kind of go off what you're saying. It's the NYL, even though it's part of our whole other trademark, if there's any arguments, it's technically, hopefully, it's end up being commerce somewhere.
So, did you, in the process, and thank you for that, when you were first coming up with your potential branding, was there anything you rejected, not because you didn't like the looks, but because it turned out somebody else had something too similar?
Yeah, I mean, even just our NYL within the logo, originally it was drawn where it was just overlapping. That's why we kind of had it broken up to try and separate it from the Yankee or a Mets logo.
Right, if you think about, I mean, those are really good examples. The Yankees and the Mets are clearly in the same industry. Yeah, but they're not in the same league. Get it? And if, you know, you're like I was and you didn't know a whole lot, it took you a while to figure out which was which. But if you're relatively sophisticated, it's not just a matter of color. But if you look, yes, they both have, you know, overlapping N and Y, but the character sets are different. The shapes of the Ys are different. There is no likelihood of confusion, and I should point out that's the key. Consumer confusion. This is about consumers. And the standard is a consumer likely to be confused one from the other?
Well, we also put the L, the third letter in there.
Right. And so it's somewhat of an art. But also, it's a science in that you do searches instead of everything else. What happens if you don't search? What happens if your client doesn't search? What happens if your client just goes ahead and uses the brand and says, well, I'll get my trademark registration. I'm a local brand. I'm not worried so much about it. I'll go ahead and use it. The story I tell, and for those who are in my externship class, it's the story I use because it really... I walked past it and it resonated. Was the story of Monster Sushi. Anyone ever eat at Monster Sushi in the city? I can't say as I have. Used to be Godzilla Sushi when they started. It was Godzilla Sushi. And you think, Godzilla, okay, I get Godzilla's a brand, but it's a movie. What does that have to do with a sushi restaurant in Midtown Manhattan? Well, what it had to do with it was the way trademarks work, each mark is exclusive within a particular category of goods or services. And the same owner may have that mark in multiple categories. So for example, think about the Turo logo. It is a logo we use for educational services, and it's a logo we use for garments and notebooks and other things, right? So it turns out, at the time that this restaurant opened, the producers, Toho Productions, had one of its Godzilla trademark registrations was in the category, was in a category of goods and services that crossed over into restaurants. And so Godzilla Sushi, they printed the menus, they did all the collateral material, probably the shirts, the signage, the advertisements, everything, opened the restaurant, cease and desist letter. And that's how I first learned the story. I used to walk up 23rd Street from the train to my office, and I walked past the, and I was like, there's a lawyer letter in the window of this restaurant. And they were sort of, I'm not quite sure what, you know, I guess they were sort of trying to make fun of the lawyers. Ha ha, they, but to my mind, it was, hey, the people who started this business didn't do the easy thing. Because I'm sure that the cost of the search, and any good trademark lawyer would likely have found this category. So you figure $1,000, $1,200, whatever the number is. How much did it cost to throw away, redo all the menus, all the signage, all the shirts, all the other collateral material, and lose whatever word of mouth. Oh, Godzilla sushi. I can't find it. Of course, this was mid-90s in the phone book. Right? I went down the street. I didn't see Godzilla sushi on 23rd Street. I'm not sure where I'm supposed to go. All of that goodwill, all that expenditure wasted because I didn't bother doing a search. That's why searching is critical. Not only because it helps to understand whether you'll get the registration, but because unlike patents, your clients are going to be using these marks, have to be using these marks before the registration is issued. And so you want them to know not only will the registration happen, but are you permitted to use this mark? So even before you got to the logo, and I would imagine, I mean, you know, just sort of top of your head, that the NY was for in sports would have been the Yankees or the Mets or whatever. But I would imagine that even when the team was named the Lizards, I guess it was what, Long Island Lizards before?
Yep.
You had to make sure in selecting that name that there wasn't another sports team, competing sports team, confusingly using Lizards.
Yeah, it's funny. We were started by the founders of Sobe, a beverage company, and we used to use their logo was on our helmets. It was a part of associated our logo. And then as soon as they sold the Pepsi, they had to redo everything. And every once in a while, people will still use it, you know, out on the internet where they post something. And it's funny to see they're taking down.
Sobe's an interesting one because I guess it's an abbreviation for South Beach. But you don't get trademark protection if you associate with a geographic area from which a product comes, and it's also sort of trendy stuff. But you know, it's not to say you can't have two team names, right? We know there's what, the Anaheim Mighty Ducks and the Long Island Ducks, both in sports. One is a hockey team named after, was it Charlie? No, it was Emilio Estevez movie, Disney property, and the other being named after, I guess, the very large duck. Right? I think the reason that they're called the Long Island Ducks is because they're out relatively near the Hamptons, and there is the big duck, which was this Hamptons tradition. I'm not a Hamptons person, but there is. It's like one of these roadside stand things. I don't know if it's still there. But there was the duck, and I think that's why we had the Long Island Ducks. Which way am I facing? There. But one can imagine that it would be challenging to have the Anaheim Ducks and the Long Island Ducks that weren't affiliated. Right? That's why the Mighty Ducks are the Mighty Ducks. I'm not sure which team came first. But do you have some?
Were the New York Giants, the football team, and the baseball team together at the same point?
It's a good question. No, I think the New York Giants had left before. I don't know about the football Giants.
Football, I think, was
after. You know, similarly, you do have teams with the same name, but they're affiliated.
But they were the Mighty Ducks because Disney actually owned.
I understand that. I understand why they were, but if they wanted to get rid of Mighty, because you know the movies have a bit big.
Go by the Anaheim Ducks now.
Do they? Are they just the Anaheim Ducks?
Yeah.
So I guess, but I bet the logos don't look the same, and they're not in the same market. And you could make those arguments, and I don't know, but certainly you could imagine that if the Lizards had wanted to be the Ducks, it would have been a problem because we already have a Ducks. So you can have the Columbus Yankees and the Binghamton Yankees because they're farm teams, but you could not, if the Ducks, which are, you know, not affiliated, wanted to call themselves the Yankees like a Little League team would, that would be a problem because the consumers would assume, or could assume, that they were affiliated because they're both professional teams. So the idea is, you have to avoid confusion. It's not like you can't use the same word. United Airlines, United Van Lines, United, whatever else. But you may not use the same term in the same category of goods or services with it, because it will confuse consumers. This is about what people really think. It's so much about what people really think that many times in trademark infringement actions, people bring as evidence consumer surveys. This isn't just hypothetical. That's proof. Were consumers confused? We asked. Yes, they were. Evidence. So, what's our standard? We talked about the standard for what makes a patent. So a standard for a trademark, they have to get that monopoly within the particular class of goods or services. In order to have the rights to use it, you get the monopoly, but you also have to not have other people competing in order to establish you've got the rights. And a mark may not be generic, meaning it won't be issued if it's generic. So what's a generic mark? What kind of a mark would be generic?
One that describes like the object.
No, that's descriptive.
Sorry, that's descriptive. You're right.
So, pizza, generic. You won't get a single company having trademark rights in the word pizza for pizza. Why not?
There's no other way to describe the item.
Because everybody is going, it's a pizza. It's not designated any sort of particular goods or services, it's particular source. Similarly, a mark may not be descriptive. So what's the difference? So a generic, it's just sort of what the thing is. Descriptive is shoe store. Any shoe store is just what it is. Generic. Meal. Food. Descriptive is probably more pizza. Everybody might need to do that in order to tell people what they're selling. So, If it's not going to be registered, if it's generic, food, beverage, and it's not going to be registered if it's descriptive, chair, pizza, what do you need in a mark in order to get protection? Now, clearly we're talking about word marks. If it's musical notes, it's hard to have a musical phrase dun 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 dun, right? Or dun 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 dun. Those can be trademarks too. Now they're not really descriptive or generic. So what do you need? Well, one thing is the mark needs to be fanciful. That's one possibility. So what's a fanciful mark? What does that mean to have a fanciful mark? It's fancy? What's a fanciful mark? That is a fanciful mark because it's not generic and it's not descriptive of what this is. Whether it's this picture or the word associated with it, Apple, computer. It's not an apple. Or as Ralph Cramden would say, a apple. It's not. It's a fanciful thing. Steve Jobs, Steve Wozniak, they like the idea of Isaac Newton, the apple falling on his head. That was the first. And then they sort of simplified it down, and rainbows, and they took the rainbows away. That's fanciful. Planet Fitness. It's a planet. No, it's not a planet. It's a gym. But it's fanciful. You can have all sorts of things like that where, you know, it's a real word. It might evoke some feeling about it, But it's not generic, it's not scripted. Pizza Hut. It's not an actual hut. But it's the place where you go and there are pizzas and it's vaguely friendly. It's friendly. Ice cream store. It's friendly. So that's one thing. Fanciful. So real words used in non-generic, non-descriptive, sometimes totally unrelated ways.
What about something that's made up that didn't exist?
Ah. We have arbitrary and suggestive. So arbitrary may have nothing to do with it, right? Or suggestive. Actually, what I should say is, I think I apologize. It's been a very long day. So really, suggestive is more like apple. Or arbitrary is apples. I should say fanciful. You're right. I'm wrong. Script that out of your notes. I went backwards. So suggestive. Arbitrary, Apple computer. Fanciful. Made up word. Like I say, I apologize. I'm just a little bit out of it tonight. We'll edit that out of the record. So, think of some, what are some fanciful words, made up trademarks, of which you may be aware?
Exxon.
Exxon is an interesting progression. Do you know what brand Exxon used to be, and do you know what it's still in Canada? No, they merged. But anybody know what Exxon used to be? It used to be Esso. ESSO. And you'll still see that, I think, in Canada, or if you have an Exxon Mobil credit card, take a look, and it has all the little things. You know why it was called Esso? Because it used to be Standard Oil. When Standard Oil was broken up into sort of like the Baby Bells, when Standard Oil was broken up, part of it was Esso. They made up a word based on Standard Oil. So arbitrary could be Shell Oil. Fanciful, Exxon. Good. Any others?
Xerox.
Xerox is another interesting one. Do you know why it's called Xerox? Well, that we'll get to genericization in a second, but
isn't it a shortened
xerography, right? Xerography was the process of duplicating things through light reflections and light absorptions, and when the first commercially viable xerography. That was a made up word. I don't remember what zero, X-E-R-O stands, is, I don't remember what the root means. That someone could maybe look up X-E-R-O, but it's graphy is writing. What is X-E-R-O? Has anybody got a handy search engine? Dry. So it was dry writing. It was without the kind of chemicals that used to be used with, whether it's photography or with mimeographs and other kinds of duplication. So it was dry writing, dry inscription. And so they said, oh, this is a xerographic procedure. We're going to call it Xerox. It's a made-up word, but it evokes, in some ways, xerography. Similarly with Polaroid. Edwin Land, that was his name, created an instant camera. And he wanted to brand it. And so he used a word that was sort of like polarized. How light goes through filters that are in different directions. Made it Polaroid. Made up word. Fanciful word. But it evokes certain things. It has, sometimes it's a totally made up word. Zappos. Why is it called Zappos? I have no idea. Doesn't tell you anything. Sounds good. Zappos. And those sorts of words. And they're the best brands. They're the best trademarks in terms, because if you've made it up, you can't. can't be infringing. And it, if it doesn't act, if it's not a real word, it can't be descriptive. There are no Xeroxes around. There are no Polaroids around until you put a brand on something. Vio. I don't think Vio means anything. It may tend to indicate like movement from Spanish or French, or it may just, I don't know, it's somebody's, they always said that the old department store Corvettes was because it was founded by Korean War veterans. I'm not sure that's true. That was one of those sort of legends. Oh, Zapato, right.
Zapato, and then OES is the end of shoe.
Okay, well, there you go. Although it's not OES, I guess it's OS.
Sure.
So I guess Zappos is a fanciful mark that derives, is some connected to Zapata, with Zapato, which I guess is a shoe.
Right.
Okay, well, that's, I took French. That did not occur to me at all, but now we know why. So, you know, yeah. Such as?
Rumpel Skeleton's is a yarn store, or Down the Rabbit Hole, which is a wine store, or...
So Down the Rabbit Hole would probably be arbitrary. Rumpel Stiltskin, I don't know, given, right, it depends on, I guess, there was spinning in that story, if I recall correctly, in some way, but... So that, I don't know whether that would be considered, that's probably arbitrary, it evokes, it's suggestive. It's not fanciful. It was fanciful when the Brothers Grimm came up with it. Now it's, you know, there's, I guess, I don't know if it's some sort of store called, well, I know how to pronounce it, MXYZPTLK, which was a made-up word. It used to be MXYZTPLK. It's a Superman villain called, well, if you want to know, it's pronounced Mixyezpitalik. It used to say so in a footnote. But I've seen that word sort of used because it's a nonsense word. It doesn't mean anything. So you have these fanciful words. So Rumpelstiltskin's an interesting one. Down the Rabbit Hole. I mean, if you go walk down the aisle, the wine aisle of a liquor store, there are all sorts of all sorts of bizarre names that people come up with for their vineyards and for their various wines, and many of them are arbitrary and or suggestive. You rarely have Xerox kind of wine. You know, they don't usually come up with just words out of nowhere. But these are the most protectable, registrable, and protectable marks because they are literally made up for the purpose. Now, sometimes you may not initially get protection. Sometimes a mark may be considered, particularly when it's descriptive. So a mark may initially be rejected for protection because it's descriptive. But if the mark holder can demonstrate that rather than simply referring to the category, consumers associate this particular otherwise descriptive term with one particular source, then there may be the ability to get protection under what's called secondary meaning. Secondary meaning means that consumers have taken this otherwise descriptive word, phrase, and associated with a particular product or a particular source. So, for example, Children's Television Network. Children's Television Network. What is it? It's a children's television network. But the mark is associated, well, now it's called, I guess it's the Sesame, whatever they're called, but what used to be the Children's Television Network was the company that produced Sesame Street and the Electric Company. And so that mark most likely would have been deemed to have developed secondary meaning. It's not that any television network for children wouldn't want to call itself that, but, and I had a client that had, it was much later on, the College Television Network. And it was, the mark was rejected because it was described as descriptive, and our argument was, well, it's not actually a college television network, it's screens on a college campus, it's not really a television network, so it's more suggestive than descriptive. I don't think we won on that, I don't remember now, but the Children's Television Network, kind of particular, the Comedy Network, the Comedy Channel, the Sci-Fi Network. Descriptive, but now you'll notice something, right? What do you know about the Sci-Fi Channel? Wasn't the Sci-Fi Network. Or the Comedy Channel. What happened to the Comedy Channel? The brand? Did it last? What's it called now? It's called Comedy Central. I think it was two channels that merged, but they kept Comedy Central. Why? It's a more protective mark. What happened to the Sci-Fi Channel? It's still there. It's not called that anymore, is it? What's it called? Sci-Fi. How do you spell Sci-Fi? Well, I don't. How does it spell Sci-Fi? It doesn't. How does it spell? Go see which network carries. I don't even know what they're making anymore. Look how you spell Sci-Fi. The television network. S-Y-F-Y. It's not a word. It's somewhere between fanciful and suggestive, and people made fun of them. Why would you change a very nice sci-fi channel, S-C-I-F-I, like short for science fiction, why would you change it to S-Y-F-Y? It was obvious to those of us who like know about trademarks, because it's more protectable, it's less descriptive. A lot of things started as descriptive. MTV. Music Television Network. Well, first of all, it doesn't show music anymore. International Business Machines. International Business Machines. It's not a company name anymore. The company's name is IBM. That's its name. It used to be an abbreviation. Now it's the name. Why? More protective. International Business Machines may well have been considered descriptive in some way. It's a company that sells international business machines. Okay. American Telephone and Telegraph. That wasn't so much descriptive, it's old-fashioned. And as they move out of the category, what is it now? AT&T. There's a building about 2-3 miles north of here. You can see it from the other side of the fourth floor. Big building. Very large, multinational technology company based up there. You know what it's called? CA. That's the name of the company. It used to stand for Computer Associates. So you have an evolution of marks. Sometimes it's a branding thing, in that they think it's trendier or less unwieldy. Sometimes it evolves because the mark, its Sci-Fi Channel becomes SIFI, Sci-Fi, because it's more protectable. You don't have to worry that somebody else is going to say, I also want to have a science fiction channel. Sci-Fi is just a common abbreviation for science fiction. They shouldn't be allowed to be the only Sci-Fi channel. Well, now they're Sci-Fi, spelled wrong. That's how you pronounce it. Sometimes, though, let's get to that in a second. Sometimes a company can be too successful. Sometimes a company can take even a fanciful word and can so own the category of whatever it's doing that its made up word becomes generic. It loses trademark rights in its own made up word. And there have been example after example throughout history. What product is Bayer best associated with? Aspirin. Guess what? Aspirin was a made up word for acetylsalicylic acid. They came up with aspirin for something. Maybe they were aspiring. I don't know why. I just realized that you can't be aspiring without aspirin, which tells you something. But anyway, right? Aspirin. Think about that. Think about that. But anyway, so Bayer invented this analgesic. They formulated acetylsalicylic acid. They figured out it had some good properties. They put it in a pill or whatever, and they called it aspirin, and I don't know why. And they were so successful that they lost the rights to call, because anybody looking for acetylsalicylic acid would only be looking for aspirin. And so Bayer lost the right to its own made-up word. Escalator. Escalator used to be a single company's product. But it became a generic term by usage, by consumers using it so much that it became the generic term for a moving staircase. Thermos for a vacuum bottle. The company that the Thermos Company, Corporate, I don't know which company was the original maker of the thermos, and now anyone. I think thermos is now fully generic. Any other?
So what's to stop a company from going generic?
Ah, a lot of effort.
Be a Coke when you're really Pepsi
or well,
a
lot of effort. Although down south, I'm told that in certain areas, every carbonated drink is a Coke. You know, it depends on where but not nationally. Ask your, probably for you, your great-grandmothers, what do you call that electric appliance that keeps things cold? That you put your milk in? It's Frigidaire. Go to the Frigidaire, pick some. That was the big brand. Now, it isn't anymore, but that was at risk of becoming genericized, or they call it, the brand people call it genericide. When the brand has been turned generic, the value of it has been killed. There are marks that are constantly teetering on the edge, and you hear it. In fact, we have an example right there in this beautiful floral box. What is this a box of?
Kleenex.
No, it isn't. It is not a box of Kleenex. It is a box of Kleenex brand tissue.
Yeah.
Right? Why does it say that in French, in English? Why is it that every time you see the word Kleenex, it has brand tissue? Because half of you, when I asked you what that was a box of, you'd say it's a box of Kleenex. Give me Kleenex. No. Give me a tissue. In the 70s, there was a cute little commercial series, a cute little commercial thing for Band-Aids. And I mean that, for Band-Aids. And the song was, I am stuck on Band-Aids because Band-Aids stuck on me. And somebody, right? You've heard this. But the way you heard it wasn't like that. How did you hear it? I am stuck on Band-Aid brand because Band-Aid stuck on me, right? They had to stick the word brand in. Somebody, guys, what are you doing? I heard it was on, what was it on? It was on XM Kids or whatever, the satellite kids network. I was so tickled pink because they had some, you know, kids host. This was not a commercial. This was the host with the animal, talking animal characters between songs. And there was one I was listening to with my kids, and I don't remember which of the talking animals had a boo-boo, and he wanted a Band-Aid. And I'm telling you, the host, the host character said, it's not a Band-Aid, it's an adhesive bandage. And I was so excited. Yes! Yes, you're teaching trademarks to children. It was wonderful. Right?
So using the full name, like Band-Aid.
It's a Band-Aid brand adhesive bandage.
Right, but how,
the word brand,
to try and protect it,
right? The word.
No one's going to say adhesive bandage.
I do. And can I give you some advice? Since some of you may end up counseling clients in trademarks, or more to the point, clients that have a lot of money in their trademarks, get into the habit of saying tissue and adhesive. That one's the hard one for me, is adhesive bandage. But I do say tissue. I do.
What's the stuff? And I guess that's the fine line that they're on right now, the general public.
You know what? You can't stop the general public. What you can do is stop the media. Right?
Is that enough to actively...
You have to be showing the effort. Now, you can't necessarily. There are companies that I don't understand. There are companies that spend a lot of money in this. So... I need a copy of that. What should I do? Right? Xerox Corporation spends a tremendous amount of advertising money in publications for writers and newspaper reporters. They advertise to journalists, to media people, reminding them that one cannot Xerox something or take a Xerox off a Xerox. It is a photocopier. This is it's actually a scanned printer printout, but it is a Xerox brand photocopier. And I can tell you, because as some of you have heard me say, I have a good friend who is an in-house counsel at Xerox. Over the years, she's told me, essentially, employees are reminded and encouraged to report people. So when on TV, you know, Jerry says to George, could you go Xerox that for me? They'll get a letter. They'll get a letter. Xerox is constantly fighting this battle, the way Kleenex is, the way Johnson & Johnson is, I guess, for Band-Aid brand adhesive bandages, right? Which is why you have Cure-Aids. But if they don't fight it, then Cure-Aids sells Band-Aids. And Canon sells Xerox machines. And all that money that they've spent on branding goes away. Now, what I don't understand is that search engine company. You're going to be able to Google something on Yahoo any day now. Because Google, for all intents and purposes, is becoming a generic term for running something from a search engine. And I don't understand why the company, now maybe they say, well, we already own the world, what does it matter? But I just don't get it, because that term, and I've seen other people say this too, is becoming generic. There's no question. People will stop capitalizing it. People probably already stopped capitalizing it. I Googled myself. Would you capitalize that? Right. Because it's becoming a generic term. It's insane. It's true. And it's important for you to understand in the context of licensing, because all the value of a license for a trademark relies on the legal protection. It's not just that it expires. Imagine that Bayer was licensing the term aspirin to manufacturers, and they were paying extra to use aspirin because it was associated with the high quality acetylsalicylic acid. Well, now you can have generic aspirins. It's true even for patent holders. How is it that even after their patents expire, pharmaceutical companies try to maintain their market power? The little purple pill. Nexium. Why do they brand it? Why do they tell people that? Because it's, you could get the same medication in a different color pill. There are, you know, lots and lots of that's why the companies put so much money into branding patented products. Because after the patent goes away, they can still sell on the brand. Pseudoephedrine. If you have a cold or you're coming up trying to build a meth lab, pseudoephedrine is a very valuable product. Damn those. I'm so tired of giving my license out to buy cold medicine. But that's that is the generic term. What's the brand name? Sudafed. So the company that makes Sudafed wants you to buy Sudafed brand pseudoephedrine, even though you can go and get the cheaper stuff and it's same color box and everything else, right? Acetaminophen. Tylenol. You have an Advil? No, I don't have an Advil. I have a generic ibuprofen. Those are the sorts of things where this is really important. So what kinds of things can be trademarked? Words, we've gotten that. Phrases, I'm loving it. Intel inside, which might be considered as descriptive, except it's got Intel. You know, AMD can't say Intel inside. Symbols, right there, that little apple. You know, a lot of different marks that I'm seeing. Pictures, again, the apple. Sounds, dun, 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 dun. Colors, I used to talk about the pink. You can't say pink fiberglass because fiberglass is the trademark. The pink insulation, and they got protection for pink insulation as a trademark, and now we have the red soled, Le Bouton shoes, right? And they've been fighting this back and forth, whether there's protection, and I think at this point there's basically protection unless you can show that it's functional. So lots of things can be trademarks. So we have these different classes of goods and services, and you can go on the Patent and Trademark Office and see this whole listing. They're not always so logical. They're not always, some of them are logical. Groups, paints, varnishes, lacquers, okay, good, right? Ropes, string, nets, tents, awnings. But what about this one? Coffee, tea, cocoa, sugar, rice, tapioca, sago, artificial coffee, flour and preparations from cereals, bread, yeast, pastry, confectionery, ices, honey, treacle, yeast, baking powder, salt, mustard, vinegar, sauces, spices, ice. Okay. So you're a Herman Melville fan. And you're coming up with a brand of salt from the Atlantic Oceans. Atlantic Ocean salt. And you want to evoke Herman Melville in the ocean. And you decide Moby Dick is not a good name. So you come up with the name of one of the sailors in Moby Dick, Starbuck. Starbuck's brand salt from the ocean where the whalers went. See a problem with having Starbuck's brand salt? Look what's in the same category. Starbuck's brand fish sauce. No. Because they're all in the same category. I was Battlestar Galactica, you know, Cara Thrace was very tart. So in inspiration, inspired by Cara Thrace, I've got Starbuck brand vinegar, because that was her character's call sign. No. Coffee. That's why the Godzilla sushi had a problem. Not that there was another Godzilla sushi, but because Godzilla, the category that included the restaurant, also included something that Toho had been doing. So you have to look. It's not just common sense when you're registering a mark or you're searching a mark. You have to look at those categories of goods and services to see which ones are grown. Because within each category, you can have a single registered mark holder. Domain names, we've talked a lot about this stuff, maybe a little bit more. This actually gets a little bit complicated. I want to skip domain names for now. Maybe we can come back to them when we talk about the types, some of the disputes. So what are the kinds of licenses you see with trademarks? Well, sometimes people want to put a mark on an unrelated item. Clothing. I'm trying to see if there are any obvious logoed clothing. If something on your shirt, I can't see what it is. But you might have a shirt that's the, logo of a sports team. Well, it's not that you're an athlete, you're not playing on that team, but you're wearing it, you want